Hey, everybody, this is the Plutopia News Network podcast, and today we're doing something really special. We're going to proceed without a guest. It's just Scoop and I, that's Scoop Sweeney and John Lebkowski, and our co-host, Wendy Grossman, who's logging in from the UK. And we are just going to talk about stuff. And one of the things that we were going to talk about, well, actually, I said, let's talk about skepticism. And then Wendy said, yeah, well, maybe we should talk about, you know, trust, issues of trust.
And I'm skeptical and of skeptics.
Who can you trust? Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think, you know, when I look at what seems to be going on in the States at the moment, I'm seeing the odd person on social media sort of saying they're suddenly scared to fly. And this is somebody who would have been flying all over the place just, you know, a couple of months ago. So, you know, that's a pretty significant loss of trust, because if people are scared to fly, the entire United States will be paralyzed. So, you know.
You think he's an odd person?
Well, I didn't. I meant odd in the sense of unusual, not odd in the sense
Yeah, I get it.
Gee, he's weird.
I think that the level of trust in air travel right now has dropped significantly, if not plummeted. Mm-hmm. And I have heard other people say the same thing, that they are afraid to fly because we've had some accidents. We've had like one really terrible mid-air collision, and then another accident after that, the Learjet I have not heard what caused that particular problem. It seemed to be a really different issue from the collision that happened, which was ostensibly related to congestion in the air around that particular airport.
My suspicion is that it'll turn out to have been a mix of factors. It isn't going to be just one thing.
Well, we haven't been
likely true.
We haven't been flying for quite a while because my wife is disabled, gets around with a walker, and back then and now requires a wheelchair. And the airlines are very, very poor in their treatment of the disabled. And so trying to get through to a plane, if you're a mobility impaired person, is a burden beyond belief. I've had to walk along with my wife, and their lack of care at the TSA is just horrifying. The airlines routinely destroy people's wheelchairs. There's been several recent lawsuits against some of the major carriers because they had video of the people unloading the baggage and tossing wheelchairs out and laughing, having a good old time. You could see parts flying off of them. So the trust in airlines has dropped dramatically for quite a while.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I'm showing you right now a website that shows all the flights in the air currently. And there's quite a few, as you can see. And it's daunting, you know. I mean, if you look at something like this, you realize that it's the airways are quite congested. And it almost seems amazing that we don't have more mid-air collisions.
Well, we're looking at a two-dimensional map, and the thing is, airspace is three-dimensional, so all those aircraft aren't going to be at the same height, right?
If we're lucky.
Well, yeah, true. I mean, but there's just so many of them. It was kind of my point.
Yeah, and with the current state of the FAA and air traffic control, it's hard to feel confidence when you do see the horrendous accidents that have happened in recent years.
And this is an example of a place where trust is eroding fast.
I think, the late great Isaac Asimov refused to fly. And one of the reasons he gave was that that he didn't think it was sporting. Your ch he thought your chances of surviving a plane crash were low, and therefore it wasn't, they weren't fair odds, I think was his argument. And actually, these recent crashes aside, most plane crashes, most people walk away. I mean, your chances of surviving a plane crash are actually quite high. But that's where that's contrary to, intuitively that seems wrong, because you're in a metal tube and it seems quite, you can sort of intellectually say, well, air travel has been the safest form of transport known to man. You have professional drivers, you have professional air traffic controllers, you have, an industry dedicated to safety. But then, the part of you that is not quite so rational says, yeah, but metal tube plummeting to earth,
Yeah.
bad.
Well, it depends on what causes the plummet. And since the Lockerbie bombing, that's been pretty much a 100% fatality kind of thing because we've had so many shoot downs and bombings of aircraft that were supposedly really safe. They're safe until somebody shoots at them.
Wasn't Lockerbie 40 years ago now?
Yep. Something like that. And it's still being investigated. They've reopened investigations.
Yeah, there was that one guy they thought they traced it to.
There's always one guy. The lone gunman's another lone guy. So I'm skeptical in situations like that when it's just that one guy.
Well, lone actors do quite. I mean, I sometimes think that a lot of the conspiracy theories around assassinations and the deaths of, larger than life characters is because we can't believe that something so simple felled somebody so important. Like people who believe Elvis is still alive or something. It just seems, it always seems like, that Elvis loomed so large in people's minds that he couldn't possibly just be an ordinary human who died like anybody else.
I think there's an interesting thing that's been running through my mind lately, and it's like I've been thinking about vulnerabilities, basically. And we had a lesson in vulnerability a few years ago when we had a substantial ice storm that was fairly destructive for Texas. I mean, it knocked out electricity for a lot of people. And here in Austin, we lost water for several days. We had no water service. And one thing we learned is how much we depend on the accessibility of water, not just to drink, but also to flush, you know? So it's like the best you can do is pile a bunch of snow into your bathtub and melt it so that you can dump it into the back of a toilet so that you have some way to flush the thing. And,
Snow in Austin?
Huh? Yes, we
No.
had
Oh,
snow the
yeah,
other night.
it was referred to as the snowpocalypse. The temperature dropped to around zero, and we had quite a bit of snow and ice. And as I say it, electricity, the electric grid for all of Texas was knocked out for some period of time
That I
and
remember.
was in danger of collapsing. Well, that was caused by an event that also brought snow, and we made use of the snow, as I said. But when you start thinking really hard about things, you start kind of seeing these vulnerabilities, and it's like you can think about how much when you're flying, how much you depend on the expertise of the pilots and on the expertise of the air traffic controllers. There's so much that can go wrong that generally doesn't go wrong because you actually do have the right people in place managing these things. Another thing that came up for me that really kind of led me to think about this is, so I'm thinking about the incursion into treasury systems within the last week or so, which was authorized by our current president, someone who had no actual right to be there, actually took over the treasury systems with a team of, fairly young guys who had programming expertise, and they were digging around in those systems, and nobody really knew what they were doing or whether they were in effect. The word now is that they had only read-only access, but I don't know how true that is.
Well, also,
But the
there's
thing
an awful
is,
lot of
realize,
sensitive data.
yeah, and it's easy
Yeah.
to
And
take that read-only access and still gain knowledge from it. You could bring up
oh, yeah, you can.
an individual
They had X.
and do a screen scraper.
Yeah,
They
well,
had
you can.
substantial access to data, but what I was thinking about, the
Yeah.
thing that occurred to me was that, say every Social Security recipient in the United States depends on the Treasury systems to send funds to them every month. And somebody could get in there and just kind of wipe out all the data. They could wipe out all the payment data.
Well,
They could
it's not
not
just
just freeze the payments, but they could make it impossible to restore.
Do you remember how the men of Gilead assumed control of the women in A Handmaid's Tale?
No, I'm not as familiar with A Handmaid's Tale. I
Right.
have some
Well,
sense of what it's about, but I haven't read it.
the way they did it was a law was passed that said women can't own property or bank accounts or anything. And the banks simply went through their databases and turned off access to any account that was flagged with an F. That's how they took control. And then the account
Yeah.
was inaccessible until a male relative or, parent or brother or husband or whatever showed up to claim it. They just took away all the property overnight.
And I think that if such a law was proposed right now, there would be a chance that it would be passed.
Yeah, and space auto guy that we won't say his name because we've been requested not to say the evil doer's name.
Voldemort.
Yes, Val yes. Yeah,
Xenu.
get your truck from Voldemort and s save a bundle. But just the idea of these people, I mean, how did people expect him to be a really good guy? He grew up in a place where the rule of law only applied to white guys. And did you expect him to not bring some of that with him from
Well,
South Africa?
one theory I've read is that one of the reasons he hates US aid so much is that it was involved in ending apartheid in South Africa. I have no idea
Absolutely.
if there's any truth to that at all, but this is, this is the kind of thing people are saying.
Well,
So the thing is that we have systems that have worked and that we trusted, all of which were just kind of boring, just kind of running on, and you had people who were in charge of those systems and who staffed those systems. We've had this rather large government bureaucracy that the people on the right have wanted to do away with, but they're not particularly thoughtful about first, second, and third order consequences of doing away with those
Well, they've been
systems or with
told.
those roles.
Well, they've been told for 40 years that government is incompetent and doesn't do anything well. And one of the things I've read this week pointed out that, the U.S. government makes, I forget what the numbers are, but they're gigantic, makes these enormous billions of payments every day or a week or whatever it is, without missing a beat, without making mistakes, without, and when you think about the scale on which government operates, it's really extraordinary. And it's remarkably efficient.
And those systems have been upheld to some extent because they are they're driven, they're put into place and sustained by laws and regulations, laws that are passed by Congress. Congress decides where money is going to be spent and allocated. And we now have people in government in the U.S. who are looking for ways to just bypass those laws, those regulations, and take control of the systems. And, you know, if you don't really like an agency, you just put an end to its funding. You just freeze its funding. And you can do that. You know, money moves as bits and bytes now. So if you have an understanding, if you can get a grasp of the technology of the system, you can just freeze funds and prevent them from moving. And one effect of this is that it removes from Congress a significant source of its power, which is the power of the purse, the power to allocate funding for things. And we now have an executive branch of the administration that is saying, well, we're going to decide that. This is really for us to decide. Congress is out of the picture. And Congress is saying what to that? They're saying, okay, fine.
That's the part I don't understand. I mean,
Yeah, me too.
in this country, when Boris Johnson prorogued, I don't know if you guys remember because it was part of the ins and outs of Brexit. Boris Johnson didn't like the fact that Parliament was trying to slow him down and comment on his deal. So he prorogued Parliament, which means he just said, go home, go on vacation. And I think it was Gina Miller took a case to court, and like very soon afterwards, it was days, like 3 days, the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 or 11-0, whatever the number was, against Boris Johnson, and Parliament had to be recalled.
Yeah, well,
And I mean,
you
that
have
was, you
courageous
know, Parliament saw the
parliamentarians.
threat. Parliament saw the threat from the government, and people acted.
Well, the courage is required when you're running a government, and I followed a lot of the developments in the UK, and there seems to be quite a few courageous politicians. We have very few now in our government. Look at the Republican Party in Congress, who are used to be, the Republicans used to be stand-up guys who wanted to be loyal to the country and the flag. Now it's just a bunch of cowards who go, oh, whatever the boss says.
Well, we have low confidence in our Supreme Court, which seems to be somewhat bought into the concept, the unitary executive concept, the idea that, you know, the president should rule as a monarch.
Which is exactly what the opposite of what the Constitution says. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed in reading the US and Irish constitutions is that every written constitution has a threat model. It is in many ways, it's a security document. It's like we're going to create this government and here is how we're going to protect it from changing. And it's kind of amusing because when you read the Irish and American constitutions, they both had the same threat model, which was the British. And
The British are coming.
the American Constitution is very insistent that there should not be a king and there should not be foreign influence over American elections.
But there have been many people in our country who really hated the whole idea of a democracy. It was just a bad idea, and it should be old white guys who were making the decisions, and women should be in the kitchen somewhere whipping up a cake or something.
My old friend Bill
Yeah, you
Steele.
remember.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, I was just going to say, you remember that Benjamin Franklin is famously supposedly said, when asked, you know, what the Constitution had, what was the result of passing the Constitution? It says, well, you have a republic if you can keep it.
Yeah.
And that's the question now. Can we keep it?
My old friend Bill Steele, back in the late 70s, sort of noticed that the conservatives he was noticing entering American politics kind of wanted to undo changes and go back. And he wrote a song called True Conservatives, which has a chorus about, we are true conservatives, come and join the chorus. We do everything the way our daddies did before us. And then he has a whole bunch of verses. And some of them, a friend of mine emailed me a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, do you remember that song of Bill's? You know, can you send me the words? And I looked them up and I found them and I sent them to her. And I said, reading them, thinking, yeah, you know, this is kind of funny. Yeah, you know, my car is a Model T. I hope it does not spoil. My car is a Model A. I hope it does not spoil. I used to have a Model T, but I would never change the oil. You know, that kind of thing. But then, you know, 2 weeks go by, and then you read the verse. We don't want anything to change. We don't want anything to change. It causes us confusion. We hate the Bill of Rights because it changed the Constitution. And you suddenly realize it isn't funny anymore. It was funny 2 weeks ago, but it isn't funny now, because there really are people who hate the Bill of Rights. And they don't want to do away with it.
I can remember, what, 60 years ago or something like that, I was working in the oil field in West Texas, and I was in, like, a bunch of us were sitting around drinking beer, and we were talking. The Constitution came up, and this guy was telling me, he said that he thought the Constitution was a fine document, except for that bunch of amendments that got attached to it. Jesus. You know? And I would say, well, you know, they were kind of necessary. I didn't agree. There were a lot of really, I grew up in a part of the world where the right wing that we see today was present, you know, though they were regarded as being a little nuts, you know. I mean, throughout most of my life, these people have been around, and they, you know, the idea was that they're a little crazy, that, you know, they have really strong beliefs and they're a little bit nuts.
Yeah, I grew up in the oil business out there, and they are now funding the right wing in Texas. Some of the oil billionaires from West Texas are the biggest contributors to Governor Abbott and his whatever his government is like.
I grew up in New York State. Well, I grew up just outside New York City. My parents were Democrats. And then I lived in Ithaca, New York, which, like Berkeley, Molly Ivins once described Berkeleyites as hobbits. And you could say almost the same thing about Ithaca, really.
Everybody in Texas when we were growing up were Democrats. But they were Democrats because Democrats were considered to be the party of racists, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, George Wallace was a Democrat.
Yeah. I was present when it changed from being the racist party to being a liberal party, and all the racist Democrats joined the Republican Party. So that was when things kind of flip-flopped. You know, the Republicans used to be just pro-business and not totally insane, but when the
I don't know if you saw that Mark Andreessen, the founder of Netscape and who's one half of Andreessen Horowitz Venture Capital, did an insanely long interview with Russ Douthat at the New York Times. I was forced to read it by somebody I was doing some work for. And Andreessen goes into this lengthy diatribe about why Silicon Valley has moved to the Republican side. And he said, basically, we had a deal. The Democrat, we would vote, you know, we would support the Democrats and they wouldn't regulate us. And then they started to regulate us. They broke the deal. And he doesn't seem to have any capability of understanding that the companies themselves changed. And that was why Democrats wanted to regulate them.
Well, the oil companies in Texas did the same thing when the Democrats started regulating the oil business, the natural gas business. They went over to the Republicans, who said, oh, no, we'll just get rid of all that. And they have. They've gotten rid of loads and loads of regulations.
It always comes down to money, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was talking about racism, but it really wasn't about racism as much as it was about money.
Racism is part of it, though.
Yeah, because
Well,
racism wants
actually,
others to
the
get money.
author, Angela Saini, who's written a couple of very interesting books, in one of them, which is about racism, and I don't recall the title offhand, but I'll look it up and we can put it in the blog posting. She argues that racism was necessary to justify colonialist and imperialist behavior.
I could buy that.
They needed a workforce, and that was cheap.
Well, the argument that you hear now from some on the right is that we don't need to think about or deal with racism at all because it is a done deal. It's gone. There is no
Everyone
more racism.
is equal. It's all, yeah.
Well, some of them say that, and then some of them
We
post things
fixed
on
it.
social media to indicate that really white men should be in charge of everything.
Absolutely. That's been their call for quite a while now. The women, they're just destroying our government.
We're not racist, but we should be in charge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the thing about women, I mean, I'm surprised that women, that any women voted for Republicans at all, because I don't know. I mean, you mentioned The Handmaid's Tale. We're kind of starting to live that, aren't we? It's a little bit scary, but there are, there's a substantial number of women who are all on board. And I'm not sure, is it that they don't understand what these guys are thinking?
Generally,
One
I've seen
theory.
it being women who are entitled and don't want to lose the entitlement. So it's like, whatever you say, just let me get my hair done and give me a big old sports car and I'll vote however you like. I grew up with these people and they're still talking that way.
One of the theories I read was that a lot of women identify with their husband's interests.
Yep. That's the old school way of marital bliss is the men get the bliss and the women do the marital stuff.
I wonder if I should tell you my greatest fear, because sometimes I think that I'm just being crazy. But my greatest fear is this, that there is a sort of right-wing elite, and one of the reasons that they're dismantling the government and trying to take as much money as they can for themselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is that they understand that the world is in a state of collapse, whether it's from climate or from whatever other thing, I say they understand it or they believe it, and that they figure they might as well hasten the collapse, but they've got their bunkers. They have places where they can go, and they have made it so that they at least believe that they'll be okay. And the rest of us are going to be left to fend for ourselves, basically.
Well,
Have
that
you read Davis?
helicopter that crashed into the airliner, one of its duties is to ferry the upper echelons of the military and the government to the secret hiding place deep underground somewhere nearby. That was part of their duty, is there are certain people that are in required to take a helicopter off to the off site. And they've had several over the years, but there are some deep bunkers that w would be the headquarters of the government in case, the end comes.
Have you read Douglas Rushkoff's most recent book? I'm trying to remember
I
its
have
name.
read it.
But
The one about the billionaires.
he starts out with this amazing account of being called out into the desert to advise these billionaires on the future of technology. And he's taken to this location. There's a jet, and then there's a long, long drive, and
Survival of the richest.
that's it, survival of the richest. And he gets there and he thinks he's kind of mentally prepared a bunch of stuff about technology, but it turns out they're not really asking about technology. They're asking about how to survive the event. And you know, he develops this idea of the mindset, which is this, you know, sort of keeping score and planning to escape the planet before it craters. And the question that really sets him off is one of the billionaires saying to him, "So how can I keep my private security force loyal to me after the event?" You know, it's like, oh my
And
God.
Doug said, "You better be nice to him."
Yeah, be nice to them and pay them
Yeah,
well. You know, be kind to
that's a
them.
real
And
challenge.
this was not his desired answer at all.
These are people who are not used to being nice to the help, and that's one problem is, who's going to help the billionaires when they suddenly have to change their own tire when they have a flat outfit at their, billionaire bunker? Who's going to clean their septic tank? I mean, like, you need to have helpers, and if you're not nice to them, they might just do something nasty to you.
I should say that this greatest fear that I was talking about that I have was in part inspired by reading Doug's book
Yeah, I had a
and
feeling.
talking to him about it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I had a
well,
feeling.
there's big business going on in billionaire bunkers, and not even so much billionaire bunkers, but just folks with, the gullibility to buy into a bunker. There are folks out here, they're in Texas, that will sell you an underground bunker. They'll bill it as a tornado shelter, but tornado shelters don't usually have, four bedrooms and a kitchen and a bathroom. And it's like, no, that's not a tornado shelter. That's a bunker. And there's
Yeah, but
lots of them
yeah,
being.
I was.
it's not even just that. I mean, Zuckerberg owns some massive amount of land in Hawaii. You know, he's been buying up land around his house so that nobody can get too close to it. And Bill Gates has apparently been buying up tons of land in the American Midwest. He's apparently one of the biggest landowners now. You know, I mean, it's a sort of recapitulation of Britain. Where, you know, 1066, the Doomsday Book, the Normans went around writing down who owned what, and they wrote it down, you know, whatever was convenient for them. And you have these giant estates. It's even in central London. Half of central London is owned by, I think, the Duke of Grosvenor, you know, and he gets to charge basically ground rent for from every building owner.
It's not just rich folks who are capitalizing on the property they own. In my part of Texas, there are so many ad hoc housing developments that have sprung up. It's just usually someone who owns a couple of acres of land that's easily accessible, and they've packed it with people in RVs and trailers and manufactured housing, just all jammed together because the cost of living had gotten so bad in Texas, around Austin, that people are moving out of Austin and moving into these ad hoc settlements. So it's not just rich folks, it's any folks if you happen to have land.
Isn't Elon's community the one that he's building somewhere close to you out in the Bastrop area?
Yes, that's down south of here in the Bastrop area, and they've built their own convenience store, and they have their own school, which is kind of wavering of, being sort of viable from what I've heard, but there's not many students. It's basically just for the employees of his various businesses.
It would not
Is
surprise me
that
at all to find out one day soon that Musk pays the employees in that town in scrip that is only valuable in the stores in that town. And then we're back to the old company towns that, you know, if you remember the
Absolutely.
song
Local currency.
16, if you remember the song 16 Tons, that's what it's about. I
Well,
own my
there were a
soul
lot of
because
advocates for local currency recently. I was actually in some meetings about that where people were saying we really need to restore the concept of a local currency. And there are some towns where they have some very limited kind of local currencies.
Well, Ithaca was one of the first. Ithaca, where I lived for a long time, is one of the first of those places. It had Ithaca hours, and there were a few stores in the the center of town that would accept Ithaca hours, but mostly they were used for trading, like, you know, an hour of babysitting for an hour of something else, or, you know.
Yeah,
And
barter.
yeah, kind of. And I think it died out, just like I think the Bristol pound died out, because eventually, you know, it doesn't really make sense to have two currencies, and most people would rather just have whatever the national currency is because it's more useful.
People are pushing for the gold standard to come back.
I know.
They have a bullion reserve set up here in Texas. You know, come on down and we'll sell you some gold. If you have gold, we'll bank it for you. It's like, oh, no.
Warren Buffett had a great line about gold that, you know, it was part of his explanation why he'd rather own American businesses, which, you know, will grow and continue to pay, you know, continue to earn money and be profitable, whereas gold is just going to sit there. And he said, you can hug it, but it won't hug you back.
I forget the name of the old Texas politician. He used to say, there's gold in them thar hicks.
Yeah. Well,
it's true.
One of the scarier proposals I've heard this week was, wasn't there something about putting the entire United States Treasury on a blockchain?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's already on the blockhead chain, so why not?
But I mean, if you think of it, the throughput isn't there. I mean, you know, blockchain can't do as much as Visa can do. And Visa is probably a minnow compared to the U.S. government.
Well, lately.
Well, I never could quite figure it out, you know. I mean, I've spent a lot of time like trying to learn about blockchain and trying to learn about cryptocurrency. And it all seemed really simple to me. It didn't really seem complicated. But I always felt like I must be missing something. Yeah. And it never felt to me like I couldn't really understand. I mean, how is it that, for instance, we're going to have these decentralized contracts where we no longer need lawyers? We no longer need, I mean, how do you get an enforceable contract and enforce it?
The computer enforces it because it's a software program and it can't be altered. So the computer makes
so
it
how
happen.
Does the computer enforce it?
It hits a threshold and it triggers the computer program.
Well, the big secret of crypto these days is a lot of criminal organizations are using it for their funding, for laundering the money that they've gotten by ill-gotten gains or funneled into crypto, and it's a lot harder for law enforcement to figure out, you know, who did what with the money.
Well, that's what Joseph Cox's book Darkwire is partly about. But there's another book whose name I'm blanking on that it did a whole bunch of stuff on how they deconstructed blockchain criminal, they used the blockchain to actually trace criminal gangs. I'll have to look up what the book was.
Well, you know, there's such thing as a meme coin, and a lot of the meme coins are scams. And I was looking at something and said, how do you tell whether a meme coin is a scam? And it says, check if the community and socials are not botted and organically grown. Check their token contract shouldn't have functions like mint, blacklist, or unlimited buy/sell tax. Check wallets. There shouldn't be any unlocked huge wallets waiting to dump their holdings. Well, I wouldn't know how to check any of that stuff.
Well, that sounds like what Trump has been doing with his new Trump coin. They made $100 million just in the fees when they released it.
Well, exactly. And tons of people lost money on that because the value of the coins decelerated quickly.
But they sent money to President Trump, so it must be all right.
Yeah, Ponzi scheme all along. The guys at the top get the money, and the ones with the little investment get nothing.
Well, what cryptocurrency is really ideal for is paying rents is ransomware.
And that's what it's
Well, that's
quite a bit
true.
of. And they haven't caught any of those ransom, not any, but it's hard to catch these folks if that's how the payment is going.
Well, no, now that's not actually entirely true. Sarah Meeklejohn, who's a professor at University College London, did the original research that worked out how to trace blockchain addresses. It's not actually an anonymous payment system, although a lot of people think it is. And the work that she did is what fed into this book that whose name I can't remember, that traced these gangs, because there are ways of doing it.
Yeah, the really good gangs, though, good as in being successful, have ways of hiding the source of funds that doesn't involve the blockchain. Just, endless chains of shell companies and things that end nowhere.
Well,
And
sometimes it's
that's
even
how they
simpler.
hide their money.
Well, sometimes it's even simpler. That's one of the things that Joseph Cox writes about in Dark Wire, is that there are these drug trafficking gangs, and you have somebody who keeps currency stashed in safe houses all over the place, and then transferring money is simply accepting a Bitcoin payment or a cryptocurrency payment, and then releasing the cash from the safe house in the right country, and the money never moves around, and it's never in a bank. So, you can't trace it in the traditional way.
Is the book
But
called Tracers in the Dark?
no, oh yeah, the one about blockchain, yes, is Tracers in the Dark. The one
Yeah.
about the one about the one the other one I was talking about is Dark Wire.
Well, I'll have to
I've
read
done
that.
reviews of both of them on my website, so.
Oh, very good. Because I've been interested, in dark money for a long time, and it really concerned me when crypto came along because I could see that that was going to be where all the cartels laundered their funds.
Yeah.
I'm tracking down books. I found Dark Wire.
Well, Joseph Cox, who wrote
Is
Dark Wire, is one of the founders of 404 Media, which is a year old website that is doing really good work on
yeah.
tech and crime and things like that, surveillance and so
Well,
forth.
that actually kind of gets us to what we were originally talking about, discussing today, which is skepticism and trust. We've certainly talked about a lot of things that might lead to a degree of skepticism, but then, of course, who can you trust? Can you trust 404 Media? Can you trust the New York Times? Can you trust the Washington Post
Can you
now? A lot
trust
of people
us?
don't trust Washington Post today. Well, no, you absolutely can't trust us. We know that.
I'm
Well, one of the
proud.
things that I wish more legacy media would copy is the thing that Wikipedia does, which is that every page on Wikipedia has a talk page, and you can see the ver you can go you can pay, scroll back through previous versions of the page. You can see discussions about why something is included or not included, or challenged and not challenged, and you get a very good sense of how the page was curated and how knowledge in general is curated at Wikipedia. And I do think if legacy media did more of that. Now you can't always do that in legacy media, because when you're a reporter and you interview somebody who needs to be protected, you can't expose how you got certain kinds of information.
Guess who wants to kill Wikipedia?
Yes, I know. This
Space
is
Truck Boy.
yeah, and they're going to be going after Internet Archive too, because the archive is doing things like saving the data that was deleted from the CDC website and stuff like that. So you've got these organizations that are trying very hard to do facts and science and so forth, and they disagree with people who don't like to be disagreed with.
Yeah, a lot of alternative media backed up all of their broadcasts to the archive as well. My friend Thorne Dreyer does a very lefty radio show here in Austin, and they've regularly backed up their stuff because just the fear that someone's going to pull the plug someday. And that, with the radio, that particularly goes away because when someone takes over a radio operation, they just throw everything in the garbage.
Well, so did
Well,
Hollywood.
have you looked at what Elon Musk, how he was trying to attack Wikipedia? He was asking people to defund Wikipedia, to stop giving
So he
it
was asking
money,
the government
which
to defund Wikipedia, which is not how Wikipedia gets funded.
exactly.
Actually, what I heard was that he was asking the readers to defund Wikipedia, the people who are like me who are donating to Wikipedia. And
Well, a lot of people read it as
to
his
me, that
suggestion.
means that people will give more to Wikipedia.
That's like
Wikipedia will actually get more money if Elon is attacking them. That's what I believe.
Yeah, I think, well, it'll be a different group of people. I mean, it's an interesting question how much his behavior has contributed to this, but the latest statistics are that Tesla sales have plummeted in Europe.
Oh, absolutely plummeted. And it's plummeted here as
I
well.
think in the US too, yeah.
Well,
And
the people, kind of people who bought Teslas were people who, wanted to get rid of climate change and, who were not right-wing conspiracy theorists. They were, if anything, they were liberal lefties, who wanted to do good things.
yeah, and the nightmare formerly known as Twitter has been l losing steam for qu quite a while since he took over.
Yeah, but there's a long way down from where it is, I mean, I forget what the last figure I saw for Blue Sky was 25 million. That's a it's tiny. It's a rounding error for Twitter.
Here's what Musk had posted on X. Wokepedia.
Oh, okay. Well, I saw a previous message that said defund Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And that was everybody's reaction was, how does he think Wikipedia gets its money?
Yeah, well,
Well, and that actually raises a question about I don't think Elon Musk is supposed to be a genius and one of the smartest people in the world, and I don't think he has any sense, really. He may be smart on some level, but I'm just not getting it. And I certainly don't have a degree of confidence in Trump's intelligence.
well, his way of being successful is to impose chaos on whatever it is he wants to take over. And that's what's happened with his various companies. He didn't do the really big brain work at SpaceX. He has people who do that. And anybody that was trying to claim that they are the brains behind SpaceX, he would get rid of them. Same thing with
This is
Tesla.
the thing.
He
This
didn't
is the
invent the
interesting thing.
Tesla.
This is the interesting thing. He is supposed to be running X, Twitter, X Twitter, SpaceX, Tesla,
The Boring Company,
Neuralink.
Neuralink, yep.
I mean, what
The
there's
United States. Yeah.
at least five companies that he's supposed to be running, and at the same, but he has time to go and sleep in the Department of the Treasury or wherever and mess around with its computer system. I mean, the conclusion you kind of tend to draw there is that the companies are glad he's not around interfering with things.
There's
Could
been
be.
movements inside his companies to get rid of him because of his $56 billion pay raise. I mean, come
Ah, well.
How does
Well, how does he become the richest man in the world? That always boggles me.
It's paper wealth. It's paper wealth. It's shares.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he can borrow
Which
against
could
it.
go away.
It
You
could
know, it's
go
like
away.
Tesla. Tesla stock could collapse, and that would be probably a source of difficulty for him.
Yeah, but in the meantime, he can borrow against it.
Yeah, massive wealth can go away. I was just reading about, I'm trying to remember his name, the guy behind US Web back in the day, who became really rich and now is a lunatic kind of trying to hang on to existence. Because he did a lot of stuff very similar to Musk. I think it was John Lecuona or something. Does that ring a bell? I'd have to look back at the article. It was out today.
Well, you think it was Lacona?
Lecuona. Yeah, and U.S. Webb was where he got his money.
Oh, Lacone, maybe. No, this is a different guy. I don't know. U.S. Webb, huh? Of course, I hate to do research while we're supposed to be talking, but
Hey,
I
that's
mean,
what we do.
it makes sense to
there's
look.
a Joe Fromage, Toby Corey, Ken Campbell, Jim Heffernan, and Sheldon Laub started
Oh,
U.S. Webb. They were the founders of it.
Joe Firmage was the one.
Okay, Joe Fromage. Okay,
Yeah.
and what were you hearing about him?
Well, he's now living with his mom because he got so much money from, basically doing a kind of the high-tech Ponzi scheme. After he left, he's left U.S. Webb, and it was just, it was out on Apple News today, and it's just an interesting article of the fall of somebody who is massively wealthy and convinced other people to give him their money, and it did not end well.
Well, there's something here about how he was charged with financially exploiting an 80-year-old woman.
Yep, well, he did that to a lot of old folk.
No, interesting.
Yeah, it was an interesting article there, but that's just it. Just because you are king of the hill today doesn't mean the hill disappears.
You mean it doesn't mean the hill will be there tomorrow?
Yep.
You mean it doesn't mean it doesn't disappear.
So my question is, we got 10 minutes or so left. Who do we trust? Or how do we restore trust?
I think, we're probably never going to go back to. If we were ever in a situation where everybody, where there was sort of general agreement, I'm not sure we can go back to that. But what we can do is build communities in which people can trust each other. And the problem is, you're going to have some that's what we have now, is we have this division between communities. And I don't know how we get out of that.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot, about how, I mean, I started thinking that, and this was like people were talking about resistance or whatever, and said, well, it's really clear to me that we need to quit looking at social media so much and be more involved with actual communities. And of course, I've been a member of the Well forever, so I think of communities as being sort of like the
But
Well.
the well is social media. I mean, that's the thing, is people talk about social media like, when what they mean is Facebook, or with but what the well is social media. Web bulletin boards are social
Well,
media.
it's true social media, but it's a community too, and
Yes.
it's a community in a sense that you can't very well form. Well, on Facebook, you might be able to build a community in a Facebook group or something. There's some,
Facebook groups are communities, and some of them are quite toxic and some of them are not. And on Twitter, there are definitely communities on Twitter. I mean, I think all social media support offline communities, the best of them. And if you look at Twitter, for example, there's a lot of scientists and academics who moved from Twitter to Blue Sky or to Mastodon, where they've sort of been rebuilding,
Yeah.
and
And people sort of trust Blue Sky right now, but they're a little concerned because the trajectory of Blue Sky is not unlike the trajectory of Twitter. And there's a question about, especially, I mean, Blue Sky doesn't really have a clear business model so far. So the question is, how eventually will Blue Sky?
you don't spend
Oh,
enough
go
time
ahead.
on Mastodon, because on Mastodon nobody trusts Blue Sky.
Well,
Oh, well, no, I know that. I'm just talking about people on Blue Sky. Yeah. Mastodon is a bunch of servers
Yeah, let's like
that
use that
may or
one.
may not be sharing information. It's
It's
not.
a lot like it's a lot of lot similar. The structure is similar to Usenet, but the point is actually not. It's not that you don't trust a social media site, because there isn't such a thing. It isn't a thing.
Right.
It's a group of communities, and you trust some of the communities and not others,
Yeah,
right?
and you have to remember that a lot of the people on the Mastodon and Blue Sky and whatever are a specific kind of person. And there are many, many more just ordinary folk who just wanted to point and click and talk to their friends on Facebook. And you still see a lot of that. So you have to remember that these other social groups are pretty limited in their scope. It's not everyone is flocking there. It's certain people go to certain areas. And
But also
that's the
remember
best
the
you're going to
conversation.
get.
But also remember the conversation we had with Amy Bruckman, where she was talking about her se the section that she was in Reddit, which is which is like a science subreddit, and there they have, there's a requirement that actually to be somebody who answers people's questions, you have to have a science degree. And or ask a historian on Reddit, where the people answering people's questions are all historians, and they shut down certain kinds of questions because they know that they just lead to pointless arguments. But there are other sections of Reddit which are more conspiracy theory oriented, where you wouldn't necessarily trust what somebody said. So I mean, it really is about the group particular group of people that are using the social medium. It's not it's not the site itself.
Yeah,
It's
there's
not
no one size
Okay.
fits all.
I want to talk about something in particular that is related to Reddit. So a guy on Reddit whose handle is Evolved Fungi, Fungi, this decided that it would be a good idea. He saw a lot of people concerned about what's happening to the US right now and wanting to respond in some way and not really quite pulling it together. So he decided it would be a good idea to have a national protest movement in all 50 states to have protests at the state capitals or whatever. And he started talking that up and he called it 50501, 50 states, 50, I guess, protests in one day. And that kind of got picked up. And it was being picked up in a way that was emergent, disorganized, decentralized. There wasn't anybody clearly behind it. I started hearing about this and I started expressing concern that, we don't know who's behind this thing. It could be Russian operatives. It could be, alt-right people. It could be a setup to get a bunch of people to come out and protest so that counter-protesters could show up and it caused trouble, et cetera, et cetera. It turned out to be none of those things, and I was wrong, which I've had to, I've had a humbling of experience of having to tell people, well, I was wrong about it, because it really did kind of work out that in all 50 states on the same day, which was the 5th, which was yesterday, the people showed up and protested. And the fact that it was not an organized, not a truly organized protest, there was a degree of organization that came into it as it evolved, but it wasn't organized to the extent that it had as much impact as it might have had if it had a bit more organization. And another issue with it is it was happening on a work day, so a lot of people couldn't show up. But it happened.
It sounds a bit like what happened in the late 60s with protest. There was
well, it's true, and Occupy was this way too.
And that's
Occupy was similar to this.
Yeah, that's how it develops. If it develops organically, it'll survive.
Yeah,
and what I wanted to say is, so this thing is starting to form as a community that has presence on Reddit and other social media, but there's a lot happening in a subreddit, and there's another subreddit that's also connected with it, and I'm dissing on it at the moment, but there was another group. I can't see right now who they are. And they have a Discord server. So there's a lot of activity on this Discord server. Tons of people were showing up. Oh, well, there's a third place. So they have groups on Signal. They have a main group and they have state groups on Signal. And the protest was quite a bit organized through people communicating through Signal. Reddit was sort of like the instigator was on Reddit. A lot of the initial activity was on Reddit. And then there was a lot of activity on the Discord server and on Signal to kind of pull the thing together. So a movement is beginning and communities are forming in the wake of this initial protest. And it looks like it may amount to something, you know? And the thing is that it's emergent. It's something where one person started talking about doing a thing and other people picked it up. And it's really starting to take shape. I didn't want to leave without mentioning that.
Well.
But we are out of time.
Speaking of leaving, let's leave it on a high note and just hope for the best.
Thanks for showing up. And thanks to all you people who are out there listening to us and maybe watching us on YouTube. And again, our website is at plutopia.io. And if you want to give us money to support our efforts, we don't charge for anything, but we do ask people to give us support as they can. And if you're watching us on YouTube, as they say, hit the subscribe button. We need to get a neat little animation for that that points at the subscribe button.
There's no cover charge, but we'll hit you up for a donation on the way home.
Right on. Right on. All right. Off we go.
Good night. Good luck.
You can stay in touch with Plutopia at plutopia.io. On Facebook, look for at Plutopia News. On Twitter, it's at Plutopia. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.